A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one about digital archiving for freelancers and small businesses. His core question is, when you've got a rotating roster of clients and you close an account, what are the workflows that actually handle migrating old data into proper archival, ideally automated? And then the bigger question, in small businesses without regulatory requirements, is keep everything forever a valid strategy, or can indefinite retention actually create compliance problems down the road? There's a lot to unpack here.
There really is, and I love this question because it sits right at the intersection of practical workflow and something that sounds like a philosophy but has real legal teeth. The short answer on indefinite retention, and I want to get this out front, is that keep everything forever is actually more dangerous than delete nothing, even for small businesses that aren't subject to HIPAA or GDPR or whatever alphabet soup of regulations people think doesn't apply to them.
That feels counterintuitive. Storage is cheap, search is good. Why is keeping old contracts and emails from a client you haven't worked with since 2019 a liability?
Because in a legal discovery situation, which can happen to any business, not just big ones, every document you possess is discoverable. If you get sued by a client, or if you're involved in litigation where your old client's data is tangentially relevant, the opposing counsel gets to ask for everything. That archive folder from 2019? That email thread where you made an offhand comment that could be taken out of context 8 years later? You can't selectively produce documents. If you have them, you hand them over.
The archive becomes a minefield you forgot you planted.
There's a phrase in records management that I think about a lot. If it doesn't exist, it can't be subpoenaed. Now, that's not a license to shred everything the moment a dispute arises. That's spoliation, and it'll get you in enormous trouble. But having a routine documented retention policy where you delete things on a schedule, that's actually protective. You're not deleting because you're hiding something. You're deleting because that's what your policy says you do.
The policy predates the lawsuit, which is the thing that makes it legitimate.
If you only start deleting when you smell trouble, you're in spoliation territory, and judges do not like that. But if you've had a policy for years that says we retain client project files for 3 years after account closure, then purge, and you've been following it consistently, that's just good business hygiene.
Never delete isn't the safety net people think it is. It's more like keeping every receipt you've ever received in your wallet and then wondering why it's hard to find the one you actually need.
That's exactly the right analogy, and it brings us to the first half of the prompt, which is about archiving workflows. Because what you actually want isn't a digital attic where you shove everything and forget it. You want a structured archive where you can find things and where you know what's in there and when it's going away.
Let's talk about the workflow piece then. Someone's closing a client account. They've got a folder structure, maybe by client, maybe by project, with contracts, deliverables, correspondence, invoices. What does a good archiving process actually look like?
The gold standard for small businesses, and I've seen this implemented really well in a few different setups, has three stages. Stage one is triage at project close. You don't just drag the folder to an archive drive and call it done. You go through and separate what I'd call the permanent record from the working files.
What's the distinction?
Permanent records are things like the signed contract, the final deliverables, the invoice and proof of payment, any IP assignments or licenses, non-disclosure agreements, and a project summary if you keep those. These are the documents that prove what happened, what was agreed to, and what was delivered. They're typically a tiny fraction of the total folder, maybe 5 to 10%.
The working files.
Draft versions, internal notes, email exports, Slack threads if you're exporting those, design iterations, feedback rounds, the version where the client asked for the logo to be bigger and then smaller and then bigger again. That stuff has very little long-term value, but it's where most of the volume lives. And it's also where the liability lives. Those internal notes and draft discussions are exactly the things you don't want surfaced in discovery.
Stage 1 is separating the wheat from the chaff.
Stage 2 is tagging and metadata. This is where automation really shines, and it's also where most small businesses drop the ball because they think folders are enough. But folders are a single axis of organization. You archive by client name, great. What if you need to find all projects from 2021 that involved a specific subcontractor? Or all contracts with a particular liability clause? Folders don't give you that.
You're saying the archive needs to be searchable on multiple dimensions.
And the minimum viable metadata for a closed client account is client name, project dates, project type or category, key people involved, and any relevant tags, like NDA in place or contains third-party IP or warranty period through 2027. That last one is especially important because it tells you when you can safely delete.
How do you actually implement that without it becoming a second job?
This is where the automation part of the prompt gets interesting. The simplest approach is a folder naming convention that encodes the metadata. Something like 2024-03, Acme Corporate, Brand Refresh, NDA, Warranty 2027. Not elegant, but it's searchable and it costs you nothing. A step up is using something like Hazel on Mac or a PowerShell script on Windows that watches an archive folder and automatically applies tags based on naming patterns.
Hazel is the little folder watching automation tool, right?
Yes. And it's surprisingly powerful for this use case. You can set up rules like, if a folder name contains NDA, tag it red and move it to the restricted archive. Or, if a folder hasn't been modified in 3 years, prompt me to review it for deletion. It's not a full document management system, but for a solo freelancer or small shop, it's about 80% of the benefit for about 5% of the complexity.
If you want the full document management system,
then you're looking at tools like Paperless NGX, which is open source and genuinely excellent. It uses machine learning to automatically classify and tag documents as you feed them in. You can train it on your own categories. It'll look at a scanned contract and go, this is probably a master services agreement from client X, and tag it accordingly. It also does full OCR, so everything becomes searchable text.
I've played with Paperless NGX. The automated tagging is impressive once you've trained it, but the training phase is a bit like teaching a very literal-minded intern how you think.
That's a perfect description. It takes some upfront investment, but once it's trained, the workflow becomes almost invisible. You drop files into a consume folder, Paperless processes them, and they land in your archive properly tagged and searchable. For someone juggling 8 or more clients, that kind of automation pays for itself in time saved very quickly.
Let's talk about the storage layer. Where does the actual archive live?
The prompt mentions archival-grade cloud storage, and I want to unpack what that means, because there's a difference between storage and backup, and a difference between backup and archive. They're three distinct things.
Break that down.
Storage is your live working data, the files you access day to day. Backup is a snapshot of your storage, designed for disaster recovery. If your laptop dies, you restore from backup and you're back to where you were yesterday. Archive is different. Archive is for data you don't need to access regularly but must keep for a defined period. The key distinction is that archives are typically write, once, read, rarely. You're not syncing them to your desktop, they're cold storage.
If you're just keeping old client folders in your Dropbox or Google Drive, that's not really archiving.
That's just storage that's slightly less convenient. A proper archive should be in a location separate from your daily working environment, with different access patterns and different retention rules. For small businesses, something like AWS S3 Glacier Deep Archive or Azure Archive Storage fits the bill. These are designed for data you might access once a year or less, and the storage costs are tiny. We're talking about $1 per terabyte per month for Glacier Deep Archive.
That is tiny.
It's absurdly cheap. But, and this is a big but, the retrieval cost can be significant if you suddenly need everything back. Glacier Deep Archive has a retrieval time of 12 to 48 hours, and if you pull a lot of data at once, the egress fees add up. So the economic model only works if you treat it as an archive, not as a place you're dipping into regularly.
Which loops back to the metadata point. If your archive is well tagged and you know exactly what you need, you're not pulling back entire client folders. You're retrieving 3 specific documents.
The metadata investment on the front end pays off on the retrieval side. And this is also where the retention policy becomes crucial, because you don't want to be paying to store data you no longer need, even if it's only a dollar per terabyte. Over enough years and enough clients, it accumulates.
Let's get into retention policies then. What's actually sensible for a small business with no regulatory requirements?
The baseline I'd recommend for most freelancers and small consultancies is a tiered approach. Tax-related documents, invoices, receipts, anything that substantiates income or expenses, keep for 7 years. That's the IRS standard in the US, and most other countries have similar requirements. Even if you think you're not subject to it, if you ever get audited, you'll wish you had those records.
7 years from filing, or 7 years from the tax year?
7 years from the filing date. So if you filed your 2026 taxes in early 2027, you keep those records until early 2034. That's the conservative interpretation, and I'd stick with it.
What about contracts and project files?
This is where it gets more judgment-based. The standard I've seen in consulting is 3 to 5 years after the project ends or the client relationship terminates, whichever is later. The reasoning is that most contractual disputes will arise within that window. Statute of limitations for breach of contract varies by jurisdiction, but in most U.S. states it's 3 to 6 years for written contracts. Once you're past that window, the legal exposure drops dramatically.
If you closed a client account in 2020, and your retention policy says 5 years, you're looking at purging in 2025, which would be last year, as we're recording this.
And that's the discipline piece. You actually have to do the purging. Having a policy on paper that you don't follow is worse than having no policy at all, because it creates an inconsistency that opposing counsel can exploit. You say you delete after 5 years, but we found files from 2019 still in your archive. What else are you hiding?
That's a nightmare scenario. You've turned a good faith policy into evidence of sloppiness.
Or worse, evidence of selective retention. The consistency of execution matters almost as much as the policy itself. And this is another place where automation helps. If you've tagged your archive with closure dates, you can run a quarterly script that identifies all folders past the retention window and flags them for review. You still want a human to approve the deletion. You don't want an automated process permanently deleting things without oversight. But the identification and flagging can be fully automated.
What about intellectual property? If you've created Word for a client, and the contract says they own the deliverables, do you even have the right to keep copies?
Great question, and this gets into one of the hidden compliance risks of indefinite retention. Many contracts include clauses about return or destruction of confidential information upon request or upon termination. If your contract says contractor shall return or destroy all confidential information within 30 days of project completion and you're keeping everything forever, you're in breach.
Even if nobody's asked you to delete anything?
The obligation is on you. Now, in practice, most clients won't care and won't enforce it. But if a relationship sours and they're looking for leverage, that archived folder becomes a very convenient thing to point at. They're still holding our confidential designs 3 years after the contract required destruction. It's a breach of contract claim that's trivially easy to prove because you literally have the files.
The contract terms themselves should drive part of the retention policy.
And this is something I'd recommend building into the project close workflow. When you're doing that triage I mentioned earlier, you review the contract and note any specific retention or destruction obligations. Tag the folder accordingly. If the contract says destroy after 12 months, you set a calendar reminder or an automated flag for month 11 to review and purge.
What about the stuff you actually want to keep for your own portfolio or reference?
That's the distinction between the client's confidential information and your own work product that you have a right to retain. If the contract allows you to use the work in your portfolio, and you should negotiate for that if possible, then you can keep final deliverables and case study materials. But you'd separate those from the client's proprietary data. The final logo file you designed? Probably fine to keep for portfolio use. The client's internal strategy document they shared with you for context? That goes when the contract says it goes.
Let's talk about email. Email is the worst. It's where most of the digital clutter lives, and it's also where the most dangerous offhand comments tend to be. How do you archive email for a closed client?
Email is a nightmare for exactly the reasons you're describing. Most people just leave everything in their inbox or a client folder and never look at it again. But email is also the most likely thing to get swept up in discovery, and it's the hardest to review at scale because you can't just look at subject lines and know what's in there. A subject line like quick question could be about anything. So the workflow for email, if you're going to archive it at all, should be selective. Export the key correspondence threads, the ones that document decisions, approvals, changes in scope, and archive those as part of the permanent record. Delete it when the retention window closes.
How do you actually do that export in a way that's useful?
Most email clients support exporting to PDF or inbox format. For a small number of key threads, PDF is fine. It's portable, it's readable without special software, and it preserves the thread structure. For larger volumes, inbox is the standard format that can be imported into other tools if needed. The important thing is to do the export at project close, not 3 years later when you're trying to remember which emails mattered. Then the exported emails live with the rest of the project archive, tagged and dated the same way. When the retention window closes, they go with everything else.
This all sounds very disciplined and systematic. I'm curious how many small businesses actually operate this way.
And that's not a criticism, it's just the reality of being small. When you're a solo freelancer or a tiny shop, you don't have a records manager. You're doing everything. The archiving system has to be lightweight enough that you'll actually use it, or it's worse than useless because it creates the illusion of organization without the reality.
What's the realistic minimum?
The realistic minimum, and this is what I'd actually recommend to someone who's overwhelmed by this, is three things. 1. A simple folder naming convention that includes the closure date. 2. A calendar reminder once a quarter to review closed accounts and delete anything past its retention window. 3. Never put anything in an email or a working document that you wouldn't want read aloud in a deposition.
That third one isn't really a workflow, but it might be the most important thing you've said.
It really is. The best archiving system in the world doesn't protect you from the content of what you've archived. And small businesses often operate with a level of informality in written communication that would make a corporate lawyer's hair stand on end. Casual comments about clients, informal assessments of project risk, unvarnished opinions about subcontractors, all of it discoverable if you keep it.
The client is being unreasonable about the deadline. That's a perfectly normal thing to say to a colleague. It's also a terrible thing to have in your archive when that client sues you for missing the deadline.
And this is where the never delete philosophy becomes actively harmful. If you delete routinely according to a policy, those informal communications have a shelf life. They serve their purpose during the project, and then they go away. If you keep everything forever, every casual comment you've ever made about any client is permanently available to be used against you.
Let's pivot slightly. The prompt mentions that with the tiny cost of storage, keeping everything seems sensible. And I think a lot of people feel that way. It feels wasteful to delete data. Is there ever a case where keeping everything actually pays off?
There are definitely cases. The most common one is when a former client comes back years later and wants to revive a project or build on previous work. Having the full project archive, including working files and iterations, can be valuable. You can pick up where you left off instead of starting from scratch. I've seen this happen in design work especially, where a client wants to update a brand they developed 5 years ago, and having the original working files saves enormous time.
There's a business continuity argument for keeping things.
There is, but it's narrower than people think. The files that are useful for business continuity are almost always the final deliverables, and maybe a few key working files, not the entire project detritus. And you can keep those selectively. You don't need every draft of every logo concept. You need the final approved assets and maybe the style guide.
What about the argument that storage is so cheap that the cognitive overhead of deciding what to delete is more expensive than just keeping everything?
That's an interesting argument, and I think it's true for some types of data. Photos, for instance. The cost of curating a photo library is often higher than the cost of just keeping everything and relying on search. But business documents are different because the liability calculus is different. A bad photo in your library is just a bad photo. A candid email about a client is a legal exposure. The cost of keeping it isn't the storage cost. It's the potential cost of having it discovered.
The cheap storage argument collapses when the data itself is a liability.
And I think that's the core insight that a lot of small business owners miss. They think about archiving as a storage problem when it's actually a risk management problem. The question isn't, can I afford to store this? It's what happens if someone else sees this?
Let's talk about some specific tools and workflows for automation. You mentioned Hazel and Paperless, NGX. What else is out there for someone who wants to automate the archival process?
There's a whole spectrum. On the simple end, if you're already using something like Notion or Airtable for project management, you can build a lightweight archiving workflow into your existing setup. When you close a project in Notion, you can have a template that prompts you to check off archiving steps, export key documents, tag with closure date, set a review reminder. It's not automated in the background, but the workflow is built into the tool you're already using.
On the more complex end?
For someone who's technical and wants a proper automated pipeline, you can do remarkable things with a combination of tools. I've seen setups where a freelancer uses Zapier or Make, formerly Integromat, to watch for a project close trigger in their project management tool, which then kicks off a series of automated steps, move files to an archive folder, apply retention tags based on project type, log the closure in a spreadsheet, and set a calendar reminder for the purge date.
That's the kind of thing where you set it up once and it just works.
In practice, these automations need maintenance. APIs change, tools update their interfaces, and if you're not paying attention, your beautiful automated pipeline quietly breaks and you don't notice until you need it. I'd say if you're going to build something like that, build in a monthly health check. Just a quick verification that the triggers are still firing and the actions are still completing.
What about the actual file migration? Moving things from your working storage to your archive storage. Is there a tool you like for that?
rclone is the standout here. It's an open source command line tool that can sync files to and from basically any cloud storage provider. You can write a script that says, move all folders tagged closed and older than 90 days to AWS Glacier and leave a stub file behind so I know where they went. It's reliable, it's well maintained, and it handles the weird edge cases that tend to break simpler sync tools. For the non-command line crowd, Arc Backup is a good option with a graphical interface. It's primarily a backup tool, but it supports archiving workflows and can target all the major cold storage providers. And for Mac users, ChronoSync is another one that handles this well.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the distinction between backup and archive. If someone is already doing regular backups, and they should be, does the archive live inside the backup, or is it separate?
Here's the problem with archiving inside your backup. If you delete something from your archive because the retention window closed, it's still in your backup history. Depending on your backup retention, it might be there for years, which means you haven't actually deleted it in a legally defensible way.
Your backup system is undermining your retention policy.
This is a really subtle point that even fairly sophisticated businesses miss. If you're serious about retention-based deletion, you need your archive to be on a separate storage system with its own backup regime that respects the same retention windows. Or, you need a backup system that allows you to selectively expire data, which most consumer and small business backup tools don't support.
That's a headache.
And honestly, for most small businesses, I think the pragmatic approach is to accept that your backups will retain deleted data for some period and to document that as part of your policy. We delete project files from active and archive storage after 5 years. Backup snapshots may retain deleted data for up to 12 additional months due to backup rotation. That's transparent, it's defensible, and it acknowledges the technical reality.
You're not achieving perfect deletion, but you're being honest about what you're doing.
And in a legal context, good faith effort counts for a lot. If you can show that you have a policy, you follow it, and you've made reasonable efforts to implement it given your technical constraints, that's a much stronger position than having no policy at all.
Let's address the compliance question directly. The prompt says the business isn't subject to any specific regulatory requirements. Is that actually true for most small businesses, or are there regulations that people don't realize apply to them?
This is where I get to be the bearer of mildly annoying news. Most small businesses in the U.S. are subject to at least some data-related regulations, even if they don't think they are. If you collect any personal information from clients, and personal information can be as simple as an email address and a name, an increasing number of states have data protection laws that apply. California's CCPA applies to businesses of any size if they handle a certain volume of personal data. Virginia, Colorado, Connecticut, Utah, they all have laws now.
Those laws include retention requirements.
They include a principle called data minimization, which essentially says you shouldn't keep personal data longer than necessary for the purpose it was collected. If you closed a client account in 2019 and you're still holding their contact information, their project briefs, their internal documents, you're arguably violating data minimization principles. You don't have a current business purpose for that data.
Never delete. Might actually violate state law.
And the regulatory landscape is only getting more active on this front. The direction of travel is unmistakably toward more regulation of data retention, not less.
What about internationally? If you're a freelancer with clients in Europe,
then GDPR applies, full stop. It doesn't matter that your business is small or that you're based outside the EU. If you process data of EU residents, GDPR applies to you. And GDPR has explicit data minimization and storage limitation principles. You're required to delete personal data when it's no longer needed. Keep everything forever is literally a GDPR violation.
That's a stronger answer than I think a lot of freelancers expect. They assume GDPR is for big companies.
GDPR applies to everyone. Enforcement against tiny businesses is rare, but the legal obligation exists. And if you're ever involved in a dispute with an EU-based client, their lawyer will absolutely bring up your GDPR compliance as leverage.
Let's bring this back to practical recommendations. Someone listening has been freelancing for a few years. They've got a messy archive. They're convinced by what you've said about retention policies. Where do they start?
Start with triage on the active and recently closed accounts. Don't try to fix the entire historical archive at once. That's overwhelming and you'll never do it. Pick the three most recently closed client accounts and run them through the workflow we discussed, separate permanent records from working files, tag with metadata, move to archive storage. Get the process right on a small scale first.
Then work backward?
Only if you need to. For accounts that have been closed for more than 5 years and haven't caused any issues, the pragmatic approach is to apply your new retention policy to them in bulk. If your policy says 5 years and the account closed in 2019, purge it. You don't need to do a detailed review of every file. The whole point of the policy is to make these decisions systematic rather than case by case.
What about the permanent records you do want to keep? How do you store those long term?
For permanent records, I like a simple structure, one folder per year, with subfolders for each client, containing only the essential documents. This is your permanent archive, the stuff you never delete. It should be tiny. For most freelancers, a decade of permanent records fits comfortably in a few gigabytes. Store it in at least two locations, one of which is offline or in cold cloud storage. Check it once a year to make sure the files are still readable. Bit rot is real, and file formats change over time. Data degradation on storage media. Even solid-state drives can lose data over very long periods if they're not powered on. Cloud storage providers handle this at their end with redundancy and integrity checks. But if you're keeping a local archive on an external drive, you should verify it periodically.
I want to ask about one more scenario. What about when you sell your business or wind it down entirely? What happens to the archive?
And it's one that almost nobody thinks about until it's happening. If you sell the business, the archive is typically an asset that transfers to the buyer, but you need to make sure the contracts allow for that. Some client agreements include restrictions on transferring data to third parties, and a business sale is a transfer. You may need client consent.
If you're just closing up shop,
then your retention obligations don't disappear. You still need to handle the data according to your policy or according to whatever wind-down plan you create. For tax records, you still need to keep them for the full 7 years, even if the business no longer exists. For client data, the most defensible approach is to notify clients that you're closing, give them an opportunity to request their data, and then purge according to your policy.
The archive outlives the business.
In some respects, yes. And that's one more reason to keep it small and well-organized. You don't want to be paying for cloud storage and managing retention policies for a business you no longer run.
Let's step back and summarize the philosophy here, because I think there's a coherent through line. The keep everything forever approach treats data as an asset. The approach you're describing treats data as a liability with an expiration date. Is that fair?
Data is both an asset and a liability. The asset value tends to decline over time. Your 2019 client files are less useful to you in 2026 than they were in 2020. The liability value, on the other hand, doesn't decline in the same way. A damaging email from 2019 is just as damaging in 2026 if it surfaces in litigation. So the rational approach is to keep data while its asset value exceeds its liability risk and delete it when the balance flips.
Which is why retention policies exist. They're not arbitrary rules. They're an attempt to formalize that calculus.
And for small businesses, the calculus is usually pretty clear. Tax records, high asset value for 7 years, then drops to near zero. Contracts, high asset value for the statute of limitations period, then drops. Working files and internal communications, modest asset value during the project, near zero after, but liability persists indefinitely. Delete early, delete often.
One last question. The prompt mentions that the manual archiving process felt good. There's a satisfaction in closing things out properly. But the ask is about automation. Is there a risk that automating the process makes it feel less intentional, and therefore less likely to be done well?
That's a really insightful point. There's a psychological dimension to archiving that I think gets overlooked. When you manually close out a project, move the files, tag them, write the summary, you're also doing a cognitive closure. You're telling your brain, this is done. If you automate all of that away, you might lose the mental benefit of finishing things.
The ideal might be automation that assists rather than replaces.
I think so. The automation should handle the tedious parts. The file moving, the tagging, the calendar reminders, but leave space for the human judgment and the sense of completion. Maybe the workflow ends with you reviewing a summary and clicking archive, which triggers the automation. You get the click, the closure, the satisfying feeling of a thing completed. And then the machines handle the rest.
Like a ceremonial send-off with a practical back-end.
Closure as a service.
All right, I think we've covered the ground. Let's land this.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1780s, on the island of São Tomé, Portuguese colonial officers and freed African slaves developed a board game called Zungo, played on a carved wooden grid. It was unique in that each player controlled both a human piece and an animal companion piece that could betray its owner if the opponent captured a specific trust token. The game was said to reflect the fragile alliances of plantation society, and it vanished entirely by 1810, surviving only in a single water-damaged rulebook held in a Lisbon archive.
A board game about interspecies trust and betrayal in colonial São Tomé. Of course there is.
I have so many questions about the trust token mechanic, but I'll save them.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want more episodes, find us at myweirdprompts.com or search for us on Spotify. We're there every week. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.